Hello and welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The Supreme Court opened its October term yesterday, and one of its first actions has direct repercussions for Michigan. The Supreme Court decided it would not take up the state of Michigan's appeal of a unanimous decision by the U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. 13 months ago, that appeals court found the state was treating people as moral lepers with its sex offender registry. With us now is University of Michigan law professor J.J. Prescott, who's an expert on sex offender laws. J.J., welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks so much for having me.
Remind us, first of all, how we got here. What did the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals unanimously decide?
Sure. The story actually goes back a little bit. So the ACLU filed a lawsuit years ago now challenging various aspects of the sex offender registry law in the state of Michigan. They brought a number of arguments to the table. One of them was that the law could not be applied retroactively to people who had been convicted of laws at an earlier time. So the ACLU brought a number of arguments to the table. One was that the laws were essentially punitive, which means that the laws can't be applied retroactively to people who had been convicted of sex offenses at some previous time.
But the state was doing that.
But the state has been doing that, and lots of states have been doing that. And this argument is not a new one. The reason why the ACLU brought it now is because the registry law and how it's being applied in Michigan has been so expansive and comprehensive that the ACLU argued it really kind of crossed the line into being a punitive measure. They also brought a number of other arguments, too. And actually, that argument about the punitive nature of the law was thrown out actually rather early. The judge at the district court passed on that argument. Instead, he wound up finding that the laws suffered because of vagueness and a number of other issues, often some smaller issues, but ultimately found the laws to be unconstitutional in certain regards. The state then appealed to the Sixth Circuit, and the Sixth Circuit actually wound up not even ruling on those issues that the lower court judge had focused on, and instead had returned to this idea about the laws being excessively punitive, and decided on the basis of this case brought by six individuals that indeed the laws can't be applied to them because it violates ex post facto restriction of the Constitution.
And the high court said, goodbye us. We're not taking up the state's appeal.
That's right. So the Supreme Court, in some sense, didn't do much other than decide they are not going to hear the case, which means for all intents and purposes, the decision is final.
What have people on the registry been able to do or not do under Michigan's laws?
There are many restrictions that apply. First and foremost, and some of the classic restrictions are that you have to provide information about where you're living, identifying information to the state, which is then made public. And in many ways, that has all sorts of repercussions. So it becomes difficult for people to find jobs, difficult for them to find housing, difficult for them to form new relationships. All of those things we actually think are quite important for them not returning to crime. But on top of that, there are a bunch of other restrictions. So there are certain jobs that you can't be a part of. You can't live in certain places. So there are what we call exclusionary laws that say if you're a convicted sex offender, you can't live near schools or other types of businesses. And some of those exclusionary areas are so large that they effectively banish people from certain towns and cities.
And certainly when the law was being crafted, I'm sure the argument was we're going to make everybody safe. But you and others argue that these harsh laws that we've had in Michigan actually diminish public safety rather than increase it?
That's right. I mean, in many ways, it is counterintuitive. I mean, the first common sense reaction to these laws is, wow, I mean, it seems like they ought to help. And certainly, or at the very least, they can't make things worse, right? And these are people who have committed a crime. If it's hard on them, so be it. As long as it might make us safer, that's fine. But what we forget is actually, in many ways, these laws operate as anti-reentry laws. In other words, they make life so difficult, even for those who never would have committed a crime again, that it's actually not all that different from being in prison. And if you think about how somebody who is homeless or can't find a job or can't see or interact with their family very often because of all of these restrictions, turns out that a number of them start to wonder, you know, what's in it for them? Why should they continue trying hard to reintegrate into society given how difficult it is for them to be on the outside? If there's anything we're looking for that sort of makes this point, think about what we do for other criminals who have committed a crime and have now been released. We spend a lot of time trying to help them reintegrate into society, try to help them move on. These laws, especially the notification laws that go out of our way to sort of remind everybody that they were past sex offender, making it very difficult for them to fit back into society, really does the opposite of what we normally do with most categories of released offenders.
So now that, as you've explained, the Supreme Court's decision, or its decision not to decide, means Michigan has to go back to the drawing boards. What models around the country do you think could serve as guides for Michigan lawmakers and officials that would ensure public safety, but also uphold constitutional rights?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I mean, I think this decision does mean that Michigan has to do something, and that means it's an incredible opportunity. I mean, getting laws passed, changed, is difficult in any place, but now the legislature has to do something. An obvious first step is starting to hold hearings, putting together a working group to start to talk about options. There are plenty of other models out there. So, you know, certain things that other states do that Michigan does not do, for example, is focus on risk. So right now, your crime of conviction determines your treatment. So even if you're 95 years old and you're convicted of a crime that only a young person really commits, doesn't really matter. We don't focus on whether we think you're realistically a threat. So more carefully targeting some of the application of these laws and restrictions to people where we actually think it will make a difference is an obvious direction to go. Probably shrinking the scope of these things generally is likely to lead to a lot of people who we think have real prospects for reintegrating into society, to encourage them to be successful and to make Michigan safer as a result.
University of Michigan law professor J.J. Prescott, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.